me, so I had to go run up a check. I got the message, homie, get no flexing on me. My attorney gon' call it.
Hey, hey, hey. Ooh, I'm coming a little hot there. Turn it down just a little bit. Don't want to be blowing out anybody's eardrums. If you're using headphones. It is a good jam, though, if you're in the car. How's it going, everyone? This is Simon for the Closed Network Privacy Podcast, episode number 11. Been a little bit longer than I wanted to get out another episode, so I apologize. I've had just some family things happening. Nothing bad, just things happening. And push this out another week, so I apologize. I am opening a bottle. Well, this is an already open bottle. A little Four Roses bourbon. I like to... it simmers me down a little bit. Listening to my podcast, I noticed that I talk really fast. So I'm hoping that maybe I can slow that down a little bit. It's usually because I'm trying to condense a lot of information into a single episode. And I feel that this episode, I probably got packed with a little too much info, so whatever I don't get to, I will just put it in episode 12 or maybe another episode. So if you are having a drink, have one with me. That is good. That is good stuff. Do like a little bourbon in the evenings. So yeah, today is March 8th, 2022. It's been an interesting start to the year. A lot going on in the world, and that's kind of what made me pick some of the topics and focus on a few things that might be helpful for those that are not aware of maybe what tools or techniques to help protect themselves. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, a lot of my episodes are focused on tools, applications, and techniques to help shield your true identity online. And you can't really foresee all the things that might happen with your data. I have said more than one occasion, don't give real information. Now, you may need to get information back so you can kind of set up things, email aliases, pseudo accounts, pseudo phone numbers, burner numbers, to be able to receive information, but the idea is to obfuscate your real identity. And I ran across this article, I think it was yesterday, on The Independent, which I can't read the whole article because it's behind a paywall. I do use a Firefox browser extension that will be linked in the show notes called, what is it called? I think it's called Bypass Clean. It'll be under the web browser section. So I use Firefox, Brave Browser, and Tor primarily. And there's a Firefox plugin or extension called Bypass Paywalls Clean. I don't have a link to the extension. Kind of allows you to read articles that are behind paywalls, but it's not working with the independent.co.uk. But there was an article that said the title's 900 Missouri residents who snitched on lockdown rule breakers fear retaliation after details leaked online. And I mean, that's on the one hand, it's kind of humoring, but on the other hand, it's also not funny that people's information was leaked. I'm not a fan at all of tattletaling on neighbors and people, especially for things like lockdown. I don't really want or desire to be political necessarily on this podcast, but it's hard not to have some kind of political biases after seeing what government basically does in trying to police everyone, be everyone's mommy and daddy, and literally getting people to snitch on each other for breaking rules, but then they're collecting people's information. And then this data gets leaked. So I'm kind of just sitting there smiling like, well, what did you expect? A little snippet of the article is hundreds of Missouri residents have had their personal details shared online after the publication of a document that recorded reports made against those flouting lockdown measures. Some people are now concerned that they will face consequences for snitching on coronavirus rule breakers in St. Louis County, Missouri. It says it comes after St. Louis County authorities called on people to report businesses and persons not following statewide lockdown measures last month. This article is dated. What is the date on this article? Because what would last month be? This was dated Monday. This is actually an old article. I apologize. May 4th from 2020. I don't know why or how I came across this article. I just find it humoring, though. It says the names and addresses of almost 900 people were shared on Facebook to name and shame them after authorities had released their data following a media request under the state Sunshine Law, which requires authorities to release information submitted to public agencies. It was a quote, "I'm not only worried about COVID, I'm worried about someone showing up at my door, showing up at my workplace, or me getting fired for doing what is right," said a woman named Patricia, who had made a report to KSDK News. Why am I even talking about this? Well, I've said in the past, don't give out your real information. Unless you're talking to law enforcement, which even then sometimes is questionable, or your financial institutions, meaning like your bank, right? Whoever you have your auto loan through, car loans. And even then, there are ways to set those things up to where you don't have to use your real identity. You can set up trusts and things. I won't get into detail. There's actually a fantastic podcast I've listened to for quite some time by Mike Bazell. I'm sure it's not his real name. Called the OSINT podcast. OSINT, I think it's actually called the Privacy. I should have actually had this up. But it's the Privacy, Security, and OSINT show. OSINT is Open Source Investigation Tools and Techniques, I believe is what it stands for. IntelTechniques.com. I highly recommend this podcast. Mike Bazell is a guy who basically gets paid by people who have quite a bit of money to try to basically start a new life. They might be celebrities. They might be stock people have stalkers, and he kind of walks you through his book, which I have the second edition. I think it's on my shelf. I can't see it from here. It's either the second or third edition. I think the fourth edition might even be out. And in that book, he talks about all the ways to talk about all the things I do, but like on a very in-depth level, protecting your assets, hiding your assets, your identity. I'm not quite that hardcore. Really, everyone's threat model will be different, and what dictates, that extreme measure or minor measure. My avoidance is not from a stalker or even a government necessarily. Like, I mean, yeah, in some levels, I want the government to stay out of my business, but I'm not trying to hide from anyone necessarily. So, he has things like several levels beyond what I discuss. But I mention that because he actually is really big on buying houses and registering cars and stuff in the name of a trust and not even tied to his personal identity. So that's, so the whole finance thing, the financial institution, could even be omitted from that, my statement. However, most of the time people are going to feel compelled to give their real information, especially when talking to law enforcement. But in this case, people gave their information, and it looks like, under some sort of, on some sort of Sunshine Law, which requires authorities to release information submitted to public agencies, they were able to get the 900 people. Now, I'm not pro-doxing. I think that's a really crappy thing to do, and I don't agree with it. But, here are these people who are tattletaling and giving their information, and what happens? Their information gets out. Now, it doesn't look like... Now, the title, I think, may be a little misleading after details leaked online. Looks like there was an information request of some kind, and they were, under the Sunshine Law, they were required to give the name and contact information. The fact that, they ended up on Facebook and whatever. Honestly, probably nothing really came of it. I wouldn't be worried, but it just goes to prove a point, which is always assume anytime you're giving information out that it's somewhere along the line, it's going to be accessed, shared, leaked, sold, fill in the blank with whatever you want. And it just kind of reiterates, you know, my thought process around don't give real information. I made some purchases online today, and I use a pseudo account, pseudo phone number, and you know, because my thought is, well, I don't know how these websites store information. I don't know who has access to it. If these websites ever decide to close, what happens to that information? Does it just sit on someone's hard drive indefinitely? I don't know. I don't know what happens to it. So I try to limit that as much as possible. If you do have to use a real name, sometimes I'll just, you know, use your first initial last name. There's a lot of unique identifiers out there that people will try to use to tie your real identity to those accounts. Email addresses, names, phone numbers, and addresses are probably the most popular. So if you use the same email address everywhere online, it won't be that hard to find you. Now, again, it all depends on your threat model. I'm trying to avoid corporate and big tech surveillance primarily is the focus within this podcast. So that kind of leads into, this is parts of this podcast are going to be talking about privacy, and other parts are going to be talking about security. So security tips is the title of this episode. And apps that I use and hardware that I use. I've received some emails from people asking questions, you know, what do you use? Though I've talked about some of the things, I haven't really gone into much detail. So I figure I'd kind of talk about that and, you know, apps, hardware, that kind of thing. But I also want to talk about 2FA or two-factor authentication. I think that it's really important to use, as well as, you know, apps for, you know, TOTP, which is the time-based, my brain just drew a blank, and I swear I've only had one sip of bourbon so far. But TOTP is time-based one-time passwords. So these are basically, usually it's a number sequence. If you're logging into like your bank, oftentimes they'll send you a text message. That's the weakest form of two-factor authentication. Two-factor meaning it requires usually a username and password or an email address and a password, and then a second factor to verify that it's truly you who's trying to access the account. SMS is probably the most common that people are used to and that you're familiar. You may not even know that's what that is, but that's what it is. And that's the weakest one. I really would try to avoid using SMS as a two-factor authentication method wherever possible. So what do you use instead? Well, we'll talk about that. So I personally have used quite a few different two-factor authentication applications. Most popular are probably like Google Authenticator and Authy. Those are software apps that you can download from respective app stores like Google Play, as well as the Apple App Store. But I try not to use Google tools wherever I can. And I'm not a huge fan of Authy. I think that would be better than using SMS, but there are better options. So we'll talk about those as well. What else? Sorry, I'm a little all over the place. I'm feeling a little rusty at the moment, so forgive me. But I've mentioned Bitwarden in the past. Bitwarden is the password manager that I use. It also has a TOTP authentication tool built right into it, which is really slick. So what you could do is when you register an account somewhere and they have an option for a two-factor authentication, then you can basically synchronize their that code to your app, you know, whatever application you decide to use. Bitwarden is a great one. There's another one called Aegis, AEGIS, which is available in the F-Droid store for those that use Android. You can download F-Droid, just go to fdroid.org. F-Droid is basically an open source mobile app store for Android devices where you can download free and open source software applications. So these applications are focused on privacy respecting, you know, having privacy respecting terms and services. The agreement for using the application is privacy respecting. That's not harnessing your data and using it and leveraging that as a way to generate income for that project. At a minimum, I would at least use Authy. If you already use Bitwarden for a password manager, I'd highly recommend checking that out. And you can, I'll have a link to the Bitwarden authenticator keys page where it kind of walks you through how to actually use that and set it up. It's really simple. And if you're already in using Bitwarden as your password manager, then it's kind of all encompassing. However, I will say this, that I do think that there is some degree of extended security when you separate your password manager from your two-factor authentication. What I mean by that is, let's just say you are compromised, your Bitwarden account is compromised, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, you're, because you're a target, like you got hacked by somebody. It could just be someone has access to it because they had access, physical access to your phone. It could be a friend, family member, an ex or something like that. Well, if you're using two-factor authentication for all your accounts, including your email accounts and everything else, and it's separate from your password manager, then you have one more degree of protection, so to speak. Now, I know that it can get cumbersome to kind of like, okay, I use this for that, this for that. Oh my gosh, I just want to get in. There are trade-offs by increasing your security. That trade-off is convenience. So the easier something is for you to do, especially in the context of logins and logging in and accessing your accounts, well, usually you're trading off security. The more you increase your security, the less convenient it becomes. I actually have been using a YubiKey, which is a hardware device, and it's kind of like the next step. So rather than using a software application on a mobile phone, or a browser extension. And if you have worked in any kind of corporate environments, you might be familiar with like an RSA key, where when you log into your network, it's this hardware device that generates a token. It usually lasts for 30 seconds. And that's what you actually use to authenticate to access your networks. It's kind of the same concept if you're familiar with that. So YubiKey is a hardware manufacturer that makes hardware two-factor authentication devices. So you still use a software app, the YubiKey app, but it's pretty much useless without the hardware key. If you do go down that path, I recommend buying two and replicating your accounts on both hardware keys. In case you lose one, you have a backup. Because if you lose it, it's going to be fantastically complicated to access those accounts. You know, it's really up to the service providers of where you're logging into, but I highly recommend not losing them. Or if you do lose one, have a backup for it. Anytime you start owning a lot of your own data, introduces this like level of responsibility and managing all of that yourself. So it can be very rewarding, but there is new risk involved. And I don't want to overlook that, because it does put more work on the individual who's trying to secure their life, be more private. It takes a lot more work, a lot, especially if you're de-Googling or you're trying to get away from Apple. It becomes even more work. Now, it can be fun and it can be exciting and new. But for a lot of people, I understand that, you know, life is busy, especially if you have kids and engagements, different activities outside of work and family. I get it. And there's only so much time to basically sacrifice, if you will. I don't look at it as sacrificing time, but a lot of people might look at it that way. And that's why I talk about a lot of these things as kind of like stages. I refer to your privacy life, your digital online privacy, is a journey. It's not something that's easy to do in a day or a week, a month, or even a year. Sometimes it will take years to de-Google yourself or to move out of like the Apple ecosystem. Now, for me personally, I've never been that tied to the Google ecosystem at all. I have Gmail accounts. I don't really have much day-to-day use with those, and I still keep those accounts because obviously don't want anyone else to sign up if I were to delete them. But you know, Google's never been a big part of my life. I was never an Android user. I've been in the Apple ecosystem for a very, very long time, probably since PowerPC. So we're talking mid to late 2000s is probably around that time. So it's been pretty hard for me to untether myself from Apple, especially considering the fact that I use it a lot of their, I use MacBooks for work, for my day job. And the reason why is the people I collaborate with and colleagues, we kind of have workflows set up within an ecosystem that just would be really, really hard to do. I would have to get other people to use other tools, and that's a hard sell. And we'll kind of get into that a little bit as we talk about communication. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard to do. And it's hard even for someone like me who spends a lot of time researching and trying things out, learning, you know, ways to untether. I don't know how many times I'll say that word, hopefully only the two times, but it takes a lot of time and effort. And I try to condense some of this down and in small digestible episodes so you can listen and say, okay, well, maybe I'll try that. Maybe I'll try this thing. Maybe I'll just try to use Bitwarden, or maybe I'll use Aegis as a two-factor authentication. Get used to it. Set it up with a couple accounts. If you have Google accounts, I highly recommend starting there because it's kind of an easy way to get started. You can download the Aegis app, and that's spelled A-E-G-I-S. You can download that. Heck, even if you just download Authy and used that and tried it out just to get comfortable with it, that's better than using SMS as a two-factor authentication. Start there, and then as you get comfortable using it, then you start finding out, like looking at all your accounts that you have and say, okay, maybe over the next few months, I'll log into some of these accounts each week and see if two-factor authentication is available, and if it is, I will enable it. And I'll go ahead and generate a code for it. So that's kind of a starting place. Going to a hardware device is kind of like that would be the next step in that process. And I don't want to intimidate anybody and say, you know, you should go out and buy your YubiKeys and start using them. If you're feeling comfortable with that, I highly recommend doing that. Just jump right to that. But I understand that some of these things need to be kind of introduced in a way that's not so intimidating, because some of this can be intimidating. Some of my favorite, while we're on this topic, I wanted to mention two articles. One, which came out last month on February 9th. I might have linked it in a previous episode, but I don't think I got to this particular article, which is on the 9to5mac.com website, which is a kind of a Mac blog. But it said, Twitter 2FA text service was secretly helping governments locate people and obtain call logs. And it says, the co-founder of a Twitter 2FA text service is reported to have been secretly selling access to its networks to governments, enabling them to locate people of interest, and in some cases, obtain their phone logs. The company, which is called Mitto AG, M-I-T-T-O, was used by Twitter to send text messages on its behalf, including security codes used for two-factor authentication. Twitter says that it is transitioning away from the company's service, but appears not to have completely ceased using them as of yet. There's a Bloomberg quote that says, Twitter Inc. told a U.S. senator it is cutting ties with a European technology company that helped it send sensitive passcodes to its users via text message. The social media firm said it in a disclosure to the U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon, that it is transitioning its service away from working with Mitto AG, according to a Wyden aide. A co-founder of Mitto operated a service that helped governments secretly surveil and track mobile phones, according to former employees and clients. So Twitter, when you register a Twitter account, they really push hard to get you to enter your phone number. You can register with just an email address and a password, but they really want to get that phone number. And what they do is they use that phone number as a two-factor authentication. I have big issues with that, but and they are really good at identifying voice over IP phone numbers, which are virtual numbers. So that even includes those who are using MySudo, which I talk about quite a bit. MySudo is an app that lets you have basically compartmentalized identities with their own discrete phone number, email address, where you can text and all that kind of thing, voicemail, browser, all that. And it's all done inside of an app for both Android and Google, Apple, sorry. So most people will then have to just enter their cell phone number. So the way I get around that is I use a service called Silent Link. Now, I'm not endorsing them, but what it is you can basically set up an eSIM, which is an electronic SIM. Most new modern phones allow you to have dual SIM cards, you know, one electronic and one physical in your phone. I go a step further. I actually have a phone dedicated just for that eSIM for a Silent Link phone number, which I pay for with Bitcoin. So there's no identity tied to it whatsoever. And I only use that device for SMS two-factor authentication. When I register an account, that absolutely requires a phone number that I cannot use a voice over IP phone number for. Is that a little extreme? I don't think so, but I get it. It's an extra expense, requires another hardware device, another phone. I use a Pixel 5 running Graphene OS, and literally it's just bare bones. All it does is receive text messages when I need it to. Maybe that's extreme. Maybe I'm a little overboard, but that's a workaround. Now, is that what you should do? I don't know. I don't know what your threat model is. I don't know what you're trying to achieve. If you want, feel free to reach out to me and I can try to answer your questions depending upon your situation. I'm not an expert. I am a independent researcher. I'm just a dude on the internet who likes privacy and security topics, and I don't have any formal training in this. So, but I have spent hundreds of hours doing this kind of stuff on my own, setting up cloud servers, you know, and all sorts of other stuff. So, you know, I'm just speaking from experience. So don't always, you know, think that you have to do what I do, because sometimes what I do, I change and alter when I find, when I streamline the process sometimes. But anyway, this article will be linked in the show notes as well. There's a couple other articles that I'm going to link up, which are about AirTags. AirTags have been cloned and bypassed the Apple tracking protection. So AirTags are little, what look like slightly bigger than a quarter size little devices that you can, for Apple users, who can basically attach them to a keychain and put them on your keys or anything like a backpack or wherever that you fear might get lost or stolen or something like that. You can use the AirTag to try to help locate it. Now, I won't go into great detail about how all of that works, but I will tell you that basically Apple has been building the largest mesh network on the planet by using this technology. And basically the way it works is the AirTag is a beacon and it doesn't have any kind of cell phone chip. It has a low power Bluetooth emitter in there. So it's just designed to last for like a year on a battery and it just beacons a signal on a certain interval. Well, every iOS device that comes into contact with it will notify Apple about its location with the ID to and then it will then notify the owner of that AirTag. That's how it works in a simple format without going into great technical detail because it's even beyond me how it all works. But what I do know is that all iOS devices, so your iPads, your iPhones, basically without being able to turn it off or opting out, are all networked together. And it uses this kind of AI mesh to relay positions of AirTags, which also basically means every phone and iOS device in itself is also an AirTag, or at least that's the way I would imagine that it would work in order for all of this to operate. Well, if someone plants an AirTag on somebody, what happens is after 3 days, if it hasn't come into contact with the owner and the phone of the originating device that set it up, it will make a sound. It will beep. That's kind of like an indicator to the person that the AirTag is near, that maybe this AirTag has been following you. And there are ways to scan it and see, you know, report it and that kind of thing. So there are some researchers that essentially bypass the tracking protection feature that's built into the AirTag, and the Find My app, works with on the device to find it without, so it doesn't do the beeping. It doesn't actually do the notification. So yeah, this is already, you know, there's a couple articles. This one is on Portswigger. I got another one on Apple Insider talking about it. This article came out just in the last couple weeks. February 21st is when this came out. It's worth the read. I won't read it in detail. I think you get the idea. Hopefully you do from the way that I explain it, because it's just another way of exploiting a technology that most people think is private and secure. You know, Apple has been touting this security, what happens on your phone stays on your phone, all this other marketing BS, and it is just bold-faced lies. And this is coming from someone who's been using Apple products for a very long time. I still use them today. I compartmentalize how I use those devices now. My personal mobile phone is a Google Pixel 6 Pro running Calyx OS, and then I have another line, which is a work line, which is running on a Google Pixel 6 running Graphene OS. But I also have an iPhone. And due to the nature of my work, it's extremely helpful to have multiple devices. So having said that, though, is like I understand the trade-offs. Like I was saying, you know, there's always trade-offs between security and protecting your data and convenience. So obviously, at certain times, it's more convenient to give up some of that security and have access to what you need. Other times, like if you're going to be attending a protest or something of that nature, maybe it's not worth the trade-off. Leave the iPhone at home. I don't know. You know, that's really kind of up to you. I won't go into the weeds on that. So just a couple of interesting articles, because these things are important. And there's a lot of things that are going on in the world today where information is being suppressed. People are being monitored. When I say people, I'm talking about journalists, I'm talking about state information centers that are tracking individuals, that are following narratives online, whether it be on public open spaces like Twitter and stuff like that, or on private, you know, or on forums and stuff. They're trying to surveil people for different reasons. And any time that government or big tech gets more access to something, they never retract it back. It just continues to move forward. I don't know if you've ever played Fortnite or watched somebody play Fortnite or Warzone, if you're a gamer, Call of Duty. It's like basically there's a certain part in the game where the map of the game starts to shrink. So the borders start coming closer and closer together. And what that does is it pushes all of the people that are playing the game into a smaller proximity. And now they don't have as much space to hide and run around. So it forces the game to get to a closure so they can start the game again. And eventually it kind of squeezes into the center and you get down to two people or whatever. And, you know, whoever's last standing wins. And I kind of feel like that's happening with big tech and governments and mass surveillance programs, is that they just keep closing in, and we're kind of like in the center, and a lot of us are like moving closer and closer to the center and finding that there's like less places to go where you can't be surveilled or tagged or categorized or, you know, I guess bucketed into a particular political affiliation or religious affiliation. It's like they want to know everything, and that's what we're trying to push back on. Not just through making changes within our life, but also being an activist, because ultimately I think everyone gets to a certain point where you say like enough is enough. You know, it's important to communicate your feelings to your congressional representatives. I'm kind of speaking to people in the United States, in this specific moment, you know, congressional representatives, your state senators, your elected officials, people who represent your interest. is very similar in other parts of the world. You have to be active in the process, because otherwise these things get passed, like the Earn It Act. I emailed my representative, didn't get the answer I wanted back, but at least I know where they stand on that topic. So, all right, get off my soapbox there. Let's get back to the show. So privacy respecting applications that I use on a daily basis, right? So, before I get into the apps, I'll talk about hardware. I mentioned I have an iPhone 12. I have a Google Pixel 6 and a 6 Pro, one running Calyx OS, the other running Graphene OS. I have a MacBook Air, a MacBook Pro. I do a fair amount of media development, including video editing, photo editing, things like that. So I do require certain applications that open source just really can't meet the needs that I have. And collaborating with others would be fantastically complicated. However, for my personal devices, my desktop and my laptop, my desktop's custom built. I built it myself, but my laptop is an IBM ThinkPad. It's an X1 Carbon, and I run Pop OS. I also have a System 76 laptop, which also runs Pop OS. Pop OS is just basically an Ubuntu Linux derivative that is developed by the people that run System 76, which is a hardware manufacturer. They make laptops specifically for Linux, and that is their distribution. Yeah, if you're listening to this and you're saying the what, Simon, I don't know what you're talking about. That's okay. It's just I try to use free and open source software as much as possible in my personal life, though in my work life, I do use Mac OS. So I don't want to do this podcast and tout that I am 100% open source and all that. That is my goal. That is my journey. And I will get there, but it's going to take some time. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. You know, again, know and pick your battles and know what your trade-offs are. So, so that's pretty much it for hardware. Now, going into the software that I use, I do use some free open source apps and encrypted, apps that are cross-platform. So because I use Mac OS, and I'm sorry, I don't really use Windows at all. I haven't used it in a very long time. I do have a Windows machine around, but most of these apps should work on Windows just fine. If they work on Linux, they should work on Windows. So I use Standard Notes for my note-taking app, standardnotes.com. It's an end-to-end encrypted notes application. It's beautiful. It uses markup. And I am synchronized between my Mac, my Linux machine, the iPhone, as well as my Pixels running different OSs on each one. They all work. It's great. So I do all my show notes in there as well. I have tons and tons and tons of notes. So standard notes is what I use. As far as browsers, I primarily use Firefox, and Brave browser and Tor. There's instances where I will be testing things in other browsers. But for my everyday use, I use Firefox, and I do run a couple extensions that I'll mention. One is uBlock Origin. Highly recommend checking that out. It's really good at blocking trackers and advertisements on web pages. I mentioned that I use that bypass paywalls clean. I'm not promoting it, but it's what I use. It allows you to read articles where there's paywalls, like New York Times and stuff like that. And also HTTPS Everywhere, which is a pretty cool extension, which forces a secure connection to web pages, even if an SSL certificate is not installed on the server, so it will encrypt the data. As far as VPNs, I use both ProtonVPN and iVPN. No affiliation. I pay for all of my accounts, and they work really well. One interesting app, this is only going to be specific to those that use Mac OS as like your desktop, is I really like the ability to be able to communicate with people through that text message from my Pixel, talking about my Calyx OS Pixel Pro. If you use an iPhone and a Mac, you have iMessage, so you can synchronize your text messages between your phone and your desktop. Well, I kind of have a similar setup. It's actually, I'm using a paid app called Texty, T-E-X-T-Y. I'll have a link in the show notes. And I install Texty on my Mac. And now the trade-off here is that when I do use that, I have to download the Google Messages app from the Aurora store. and run that as my default SMS app. That might be counterintuitive. So you pay like, well, you de-Google the phone and then you go install the Google Messages app. Yeah, I know. But that's how bad I need this feature in my workflow, because I need to be able to send MMS messages and I want to be able to do it all very fast. I'm taking screenshots and I'm sending them. So I kind of have an iMessage type feel where I have my messages, text messages synchronized between my Mac machine and my Google Pixel 6 Pro running Calyx OS. Now, am I going to recommend that as a privacy workflow? No, I'm not. I'm just being honest, I'm telling you what I do, and it might help those that are just saying like, well, you know, I'm okay with that. It works really well. I've been happy with it. But I do eventually hope to get away from that. If everyone just used Signal, it'd make my life like so much easier, but that's probably never going to happen. But, you know, let's hope. We'll hope for the best. So that kind of leads into like chat and communication. Obviously, I do a lot of texting with certain people for work and stuff. But primarily, my primary go-to is Signal. It's kind of an easy way to get people off of texting and using an encrypted application. So I like Signal. I've been using it. The trade-off there is you do have to reveal your phone number. That's the way Signal works. You register with your mobile phone number. I haven't tried it with a voice over IP phone number, but I think that you could, but I haven't tested that. If you want to have that kind of conversation, and the cool thing about Signal is that you can install the desktop application on Windows, Linux, or Mac, so you don't have to sit there and type on your phone. I hate typing on a phone. It drives me crazy. I hate it. I really don't even like picking up my phone a whole lot during the day. It's a tool. It's a device. I need it. But I'd really rather use a keyboard and mouse that's sitting in front of me on my desk, because that's more efficient and more comfortable for me to use. Another app that you could use for chat and communicating is Session, getsession.org. There are others. I know people out there are going to say, well, what about Briar? And what about this and that, you know, totally understand. This is what I use. And you don't have to use what I use. I'm just telling you what my workflow is. I like Session because once again, I can do it on my phone. I can also synchronize that conversation to my Linux or Mac machine. Again, I'm trying to be as efficient as possible. So, Session doesn't require a phone number. Basically it generates a session ID and you hold on to that. When you first register, you hold on to everything you set up because that's what you need to log in. If you lose it, you're screwed. So don't lose it. Put it in Bitwarden, put it in standard notes, put it somewhere safe that, you know, you can get to. So those are the two primary ones. There are other apps that I use. I talk to people on Matrix servers, so I use Element for that. But, you know, the day-to-day talking to the people that I need to talk to, Signal and Session. If it's a text message, I text on my Calyx OS phone. I'm using the Google Messages app. I know. But it works with Texty on my Mac, and it works great. So, anyway, let's move on. So, two-factor authentication would be kind of like next, and I kind of covered that. Which is the, you know, time-based one-time password, TOTP. So I have been using Authy, and I've been transitioning Authy over to Aegis, as well as my YubiKey. I don't have everything set up on YubiKey, so I'm a little discombobulated right now, because sometimes I'm like, okay, I need this two-factor authentication code. So which one is that? Eventually, I'll get all organized and all of that kind of stuff. As far as email services, I use Lavabit. Lavabit is a really, really cool email service. It's affordable. I like to have multiple email accounts, so I use Lavabit. By the way, the founder, Ladar Levison, he actually launched Lavabit in 2004. And his whole ethos for doing that was individuals, businesses, organizations have basically an innate right to privacy and secure communication. So in 2013, he had to suspend service to protect customers that the U.S. government was ordering the release of the private keys. And instead of doing that, he just shut his company down and literally took the servers out of the data center. that's pretty powerful. Like, I don't know who they were after, but if he's going to do that, and 2013 was also the year that Snowden was releasing all the documents through The Guardian with Glenn Greenwald. So there was a lot of stuff. 2013 was a kind of a busy year for privacy and security. And then a year later, they developed, they being LavaBit, you know, I think his name is Ladar and his team, they started development on the dark internet mail environment, which is acronym is DIME. And it's basically an end-to-end encrypted standard. I don't know a whole lot, but I do know that their technology is built on open source mail server. And I like the service. It's nice because it's, I don't require any apps. It's just a straight up IMAP, and, POP service that uses, star TLS or start TLS. Anyway, they use encryption. I always like kind of ho-hum over email and just assume that it's always going to be scanned or indexed somewhere along the way. But, you know, they go out of their way to try to make it secure. I also use Proton Mail and Tutanota, which I have mentioned ad nauseum probably over the last, you know, 10 episodes. So that's kind of like the everyday apps. I mean, of course, everyone has like work specific apps that I won't get into because I don't think you'll care. And they're not really open source or privacy respecting anyways, because they're like Adobe and Final Cut and stuff like that. So I really won't go into all that. It'd probably be boring anyways. So I hope that, you know, I hope that I was able to organize some of this into like some usable digestive, you know, pieces that you can take with you, which is one, always be thinking about who you're giving your information to, whether it's your grocery store or a service that you sign up for or purchasing something online. Because if you do that and in the back of your head think like, well, this will probably get leaked, this will probably get hacked, so let me give some, not false information, but a pseudo information or just totally false information. There's nothing illegal about giving your grocery store a fake name and a pseudo phone number and a pseudo email account. They don't care. No one's coming after you. All you want is the savings anyways. And the trade-off is they get your data. But if you're giving them junk data, then, you know, you get to win in that situation. Maybe if you're joining a bunch of people and tattletailing on them for breaking curfew or doing what else, who knows? I don't know. In this case that I mentioned at the beginning of the episode about the story about these people in Missouri getting outed for ratting on people, maybe don't give your real information. You probably think, well, it's the police. You have to give me real info. I don't know. Are they gonna come after you? Are they gonna charge you because you're a fellow citizen calling to report something? Who cares? I think that if you're reporting a crime or an accident, yeah, you know, probably give your real information. But if you're a tattletale, you're probably not listening to this anyways. But it's just a reminder put into practice, not giving that information up. It's valuable to you and you need to protect it. And that is what also is the two-factor authentication is to protect you from having your accounts accessed in the event that there was a leak somewhere or a hack, and this somewhere out there is your email address and a password. Well, if you didn't get to change, you know, if you weren't notified in time and you weren't able to change that password, but you had a two-factor authentication on that account, you're still going to be better off than everybody else. So again, it's just creating layers. It's like putting up fences. You know, you ever see like a prison, they have like the really tall fence and then there's like another inner fence. It's like, that's what you're kind of doing. I've never spent time in a prison. I don't know. When I drive by prisons, I see like I'm fascinated with all the fences, right? I'm thinking like, wow, there's a lot of fences to jump. You can't just jump one fence. You'd have another one right after it with barbed wire on it and everything. Now, are they impenetrable? Like if someone had enough time and opportunity, could they get over and through? Yeah, but it's not as likely. And that's really what we're trying to do is we're trying to make it not as likely that you are discovered in a data leak or a hack. And your account is compromised because they have your credentials. Now you have another layer, two-factor authentication. So pick a couple accounts. This is my challenge, your homework, if you will. Pick a couple of accounts. If you have a Gmail account, which I'm assuming most people do, I do. If you've been around in the last, 20 years, you probably have a Gmail account. Sorry, I had to sip that bourbon one more time. Then start there. Go ahead and set up a two-factor authentication. I would suggest go ahead and downloading Aegis or using Bitwarden. Again, remember, Bitwarden is also your vault. So if that's compromised and that bothers you, it bothers me. So I do separate them out, but it's a good starting point. Set it up, try it out. That's what my challenge is. I have received some emails and I want to say thank you. I don't want to mention who they are because I always want to respect people's privacy. I have a couple emails to still respond to. I just have been away and I'm getting caught up. I want to mention one other tool that I'm not totally familiar with. This is kind of in the note-taking and picture thing. I was watching a video today from TechLore. Great YouTube channel, by the way, that talks about privacy, big privacy. So they're talking to the founder of an app, a web application. So it's not an app you download. You actually do everything through the browser. His name is John Osbay. And the name of their website is Crypte, C-R-Y-P-T-E-E, two E's on the end. And before I started recording this episode, I went ahead and went to their website and I signed up an account. Basically, you sign up with an email address and a password and then another password, which is basically like an encryption key that only you have. This is pretty cool. I'm going to be experimenting with this. The concept is that it's super privacy respecting, very secure. But you can also have like, you can upload photos and take notes and you can have folders and you can make those folders hidden. Now, this is all accessed through the browser. And the only way to access a hidden folder is to know the name of that folder to reveal it. And I was thinking at first, I was like, well, that's really interesting. Like what's the use case here? And as I'm watching this interview with this John Osbay, that Henry, the main guy that runs TechLore, is interviewing him. He's asking him. He's like, well, let's say that you're in an abusive relationship, and the abuser forces the person to log into this account, and maybe in this account is where they're keeping like in a folder, in his scenario, in his example, he's like, let's say you have a divorce folder, and you're working on trying to leave that person, and you're saving this information somewhere. Well, all that data is hidden. And unless you know the name of the folder, you have to type it in exactly as it says, you'll never find it. And I was thinking, wow, that's actually really interesting. This could happen if you're a journalist and you are obtained by a nation state or government and you're forced to log in. Maybe they knew you have an account somehow, or they saw some web traffic and you're like, you're going to log into your Crypte account and you're going to let us see what's in there. So gun to your head, you have to log in. You could still yet have another layer of protection because there is content that's hidden that's only accessible if you know the name of that folder. So let's say it was a divorce folder. Maybe it's called something like, divorce with a number and two letters after it or something like that, that only you know. It's not like it's not written down. It's not saved in a password manager. Let's say you have very important information a family, like trusts and stuff like that. You could store it there and put it in a hidden folder. And the other thing too is that way when you do log into it, if anyone's like looking over your shoulder or walking by, they're not getting a glance at like the folders that are in there because there's some that are hidden. Now, I've just started playing around with it tonight. I really like the user interface. It's really slick. I'm going to be trying it out. I'm not making it a recommendation or anything like that. It's just something I wanted to mention as a little, isn't that neat kind of a thing. For those that like the show, I definitely appreciate any support, which could be as little as a review. And I have links in the show notes to where you can leave a review. You can also leave a review if you listen on Apple Podcasts or Google or whatever. Super appreciate that. If you're listening on a Podcast 2.0 app, you can also donate via crypto using Bitcoin on the Lightning Network. That is always appreciated. You can check out newpodcastapps.com. I recommend Breeze or Fountain. I like using Breeze. You can boost sats to people, your favorite creators, listening to their podcasts while you consume it. Also follow me on Twitter, closednTWRK, just at closednTWRK. All of the information for the show will be on the website in the show notes at closednTWRK.com. So thanks. And also, too, if you want to reach out to me for any reason, you can just email me through the website. So if you go to closednTWRK for closednetwork.com, you can hit the contact page. Send me a message. If you have any topics or anything you'd like me to discuss, I will not reveal you. But if you would like your question read on the podcast, I'd be happy to do that. Just let me know if you do shoot me an email that it's okay to do so, because otherwise I'm going to assume no go. So that was a bit of information. I hope you found some value. I really appreciate the support and you listening, reaching out to me, letting me know good, bad, the ugly, all that feedback is welcomed and desired, because I can only do better by listening to or reading your emails. And so that is that's always helpful. So until next time, my friends, my privacy friends, I hope you are doing well in your life. I hope that maybe perhaps you had a glass of something with me while you listened. And I will catch you in episode 12, which I should have out in the next week or two, tops. So until next time. I'll catch you later. Watch me win again and win again and win again. I know it's probably getting on me and when I'm sending them. So if I ever win again, it's nobody the minimum. I didn't have to sell my soul.